Hello, welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, November 17th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's Stamp and Coin Day. We haven't done one of these in quite a while, and we welcome back resident coin and stamp experts to answer your questions. Bob Scott and David Tripp are here this afternoon. So if you're a collector of stamps or coins, or perhaps both, you'll want to call right now, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Maybe you collect Nobel Prizes. Well, I'll tell you, we have information about that coming on the program, and won't you be interested? You can also email the show, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. The show begins after the news. Well, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Collectors, this is the moment you've been waiting for. We welcome back our stamp and coin experts to take your questions. First is David Tripp. He's the former director of Sotheby's Coin, Tapestry, and Musical Instrument Departments. He's author of Illegal Tender, Gold Greed, and the Mystery of the Lost 1933 Double Eagle, as well as a fine art consultant and a cartoonist of some note as well. Also joining us this afternoon, Bob Scott. He's our stamp expert. And he's a consultant and a resident stamp geek at Sotheby's. David and Bob, welcome back to the show.
Well, we're glad to be here. And
I like your new bio, Bob. Stamp geek. Works out really well.
Well, it's true.
So I'm a coin dweeb and he's a stamp geek. What can I say?
You know, we could save a lot of time if we just put that in the script. It's great to have you here. And to talk about anything but politics, it's wonderful.
We promise.
All right, you promise?
We promise.
Politics, has something happened that I should know?
No, nothing of note happened, but there are many things happening. If you want to have your question answered about stamps and or coins or whatever, the number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program voxpop@wamc.org. You know, it has nothing to do with stamps or coins, but I found it fascinating that this ancient Ten Commandments tablet was sold at auction for almost $1 million. Yeah. It's an old tablet.
Well, it's signed by C.B. DeMille, is it?
I don't know if it's that old.
So essentially, it's a piece of rock with more things you're not allowed to do.
Exactly. And so
it'll never sell.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, yeah.
And of course, David, you always do homework. This is great. This allows me to go up to OTB before the show and
don't have to be here at all.
Right,
okay,
exactly. So your list includes a Nobel Prize for polio to be sold December 6th, and that'll be at auction?
That'll be at auction at Sotheby's in New York. And if you've got an extra $500,000, give or take, you're in the game.
Now, why would you want that?
Well, the funny thing about Nobel Prizes is that, you know, they all look alike, and there were probably metals. There are probably over 900 in existence. So they're not actually the rarest thing on the planet, but it's the story behind the recipient, what they won them for. I mean, there are people who've won the Nobel Prizes for things that I can't even figure out. I mean,
right.
I can't put two and two together anyway. But this is for the beginning of the conquest of polio.
This was a big one.
This was a
Why is it up for auction?
The widow of the recipient just died, and you know the old theory is it's easier to divide money than it is to divide objects. Ooh. And if there are kids in the family, well, what do you do? It's worth $500,000. What, do you chop it into three pieces?
Now, is it possible this will go for over $500,000?
It is possible. I think this is a cool one. I mean, the record for a Nobel Prize
$4 million,
which was the one that was awarded to Watson for the discovery of DNA.
Yes.
And Crick's brought, I think, about $2.5 to $2.6 million.
Exactly. But the Watson one was interesting because somebody didn't buy it.
Mm. This is the cool story, yeah.
A Russian oligarch bid $4 million for it and paid the money and then took the medal and gave it back to Watson.
Really?
Yep.
Yes, because Watson wanted to sell it to found a seat of learning.
Well, and he runs the Cold Spring Laboratories in Long Island, which are fabulous, and they're doing cutting-edge
And the buyer
technology.
Said, here, make your donation, but you keep your medal, which was...
Wow, that is really something.
Don't we all wish we had friends like that?
Yeah. I just wish I had about $50. That's all
well,
I want.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And then on your list, toy chest sold in the U.K.,
It's Bob's typing. It's not my fault.
Toy chest coin.
Toy chest.
So this was a coin found in a toy chest?
Yes. It was inherited, and they found this little gold coin about inch and a half in diameter, an ounce and a quarter of gold. But it was struck in 1703, and it's actually a pretty cool story because in 1702, an English fleet took a treasure ship, a French and Spanish treasure ship, off Vigo Bay, and in it was a whacking great, no joke, 7.5 pounds of gold.
Wow, that's a lot.
7.5 pounds of gold. They brought it to England, and they brought it to the mint to make special coins. The mint master was Sir Isaac Newton.
No way.
And he oversaw the striking of these coins. There are about 20 of them known. And this has been kicking. And it's the great classic rarity of the English series. And somebody
had inherited. And it was in a play box.
And it was a play box. This kid had been. He'd been brought up playing with these coins.
Oh, that is classic.
And it sold this morning, as a matter of fact, for $350,000.
$350,000, yes.
Yeah. Well, and the market's pretty good right now?
No.
No? Bad?
No, generally it's pretty bad.
Why is that?
I think, you know, a lot of it is technology is changing. People are less interested in coins and material like that. And the younger generation, the millennials, haven't yet sort of focused on buying history. Which is really, from what I look at coins as buying a little piece of history.
Do you think that's cyclical?
Yeah.
Will that come? Will that bounce back?
Yeah, maybe
so this
not.
Is a buyer's time then now.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely, it's a buyer's time becoming more so. I think it is cyclical. It may not change in my lifetime, but it will come back.
As civilization crumbles, they surely have to go up in value.
Well, that would be my hope.
In the stamp world, a single inverted Jenny went, huh? A single inverted Jenny for $1.35 million.
Yes, in June of this year at the World Stamp Show in New York.
And for those who don't know what that is, that's the upside-down biplane, right?
It's the 1918 Carmine red and blue Airpost stamp.
It's a beautiful, beautiful stamp.
It's a beautiful thing, and this is when I first came to the States 27 years ago, there was a block of these stamps, and it sold for the unheard-of amount of $1.1 million.
Well, that's a lot.
And now one single example has sold for more.
So mistakes like these, not that uncommon. Why is this one worth so much?
They are incredibly scarce. I mean, okay, there are 100 of which
96
are known.
Rare.
The amount of stamps, the stamp show was a perfect example because there were probably examples of every classic rarity in the world of stamps, you know, in a small 100 by 100 foot area. And you could walk up and down the lines going $1 million, $1 million, $1 million, $1 million, whatever. In the coin world, you could double that area and fill it with things mm-hmm. that were $1 million plus. We're a much more rarified air.
And how many single inverted Jennies are there or blocks?
There were one sheet. One sheet was found.
Presumably more were made and destroyed? That was my point. Technical errors like this happen from time to time, do they not?
The postmaster who sold the sheet to William Robey in 1918 reported the fact. Postal inspectors went to Robey's door to try and get it back, and he refused, which was good for him. But they went back to that post office, they searched through, and apparently they did find more, and they destroyed them.
They did destroy them.
So they are the 100 left. So, yeah, maybe. Both David and I have been in this business for so long that we have seen items of which there are only 5 or maybe 10 copies. And throughout our experience and throughout our various visits, we've seen 20 or 25 of the 5 known copies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just the Vigo coin that sold today. In the last 3 years, two have turned up. Traditionally, there were 15 to 20 known, and there could have only, Bob and I were doing the math, and there could have only been so many struck, and within the last 2 years, two popped up out of nowhere, unknown to anybody in the business.
Of so unquestioned veracity?
Absolutely.
Our guests today, David Tripp and Bob Scott, the number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Before we get to the phones, this one came in early this afternoon from Chris via email, who says, I have coins from China that my father got as change while he was in the Navy there during World War II. Any chance there may be any value with these? Some seem to be very old. Thanks. Chris.
I have some of the same ones because my dad was in China during World War II as well, mm-hmm. and they're sitting in a drawer in my desk.
Not worth all that
they're
much.
Not going to be worth all
are
that
there
much
those money. Rarities however that
there
may
are
be worth
there are
so you need to see them
absolutely if you know we will give the email address if you can get images of it to us, but generally if they're low denomination and have seen quite a bit of circulation, they were made in the millions upon millions.
Okay.
But I mean, I checked all the ones my dad brought back and gave me from China when I was a kid. And
they're still in the drawer.
They're still in the drawer. You got it.
And here's a unique thing. If you'd have brought stamps back rather than coins, they would almost certainly be worth more.
Exactly. Ah. Chinese stamps, big.
The first shot of the show, let's record that one as a Bob shot. Penny and Delmar, you're on. Penny.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I don't know if this is appropriate, but I just found old Irish paper money from the Central Bank of Ireland, and the writing on it looks like it was in Irish.
Okay, Gaelic. Yeah.
I wonder, is that of any value at all?
Well, it depends specifically on when they were made. And again, mm-hmm. images are always the best way to check with things like that. But many countries overseas, as they go from one iteration to another, they what they call demonetize. So it may be a £1 note. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, so its value will be collectible, perhaps, and may, you know, so if you get its images. But for example, in England, they're changing the £5 note. They're making them out of polymer.
We're getting plastic fibers.
Yes.
Oh, really?
So what they're going to do is all the ones that are currently in circulation, they give you a period where they demonetize them and they lose their face value.
Right.
Unless you take and a shopkeeper won't take them. And if you want to change them for the new ones, you actually have to go to the Bank of England and swap them in and get your new plastic
And they
notes.
Virtually did this overnight in India, was
in
it?
India just this last week, yeah. The only country that hasn't done it yet is the United States.
When will that happen? When will the Trump dollar bill be out?
Well, there's been a lot of talk recently and some articles in
Across
the Times.
The line,
and
no, I did. We all have to drink. I'm
about,
sorry.
About demonetizing $100 bills. Because it's too big and it creates an underground economy.
Oh, I heard about that. All right, we'll have to take a break. Penny, thanks for the call. Thank David you. Tripp and Bob Scott, our guests today. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. More stamps, more coins, more you, more me, more everybody coming up.
Support comes from Colby Attorney Service, document filing and information retrieval, and other services including legal publishing and corporate record searches. ColbyService.com. Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony, locally owned seafood restaurant and raw bar, RealSeafoodCo.com. The University at Albany Theater Program presenting Water by the Spoonful, a drama about the cycle of addiction and the struggle to break free, written by Chiara Alegria Hudes, November 16th to 20th, albany.edu/theater. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear, including Zenka from Paris and Coco Song from Italy, eye exams by appointment, eyedentityeyewearalbany.com. Encur and Compliance Services Incorporated, Greenwich, New York, and Mendota Heights, Minnesota. Serving life insurance carriers and their distribution partners, offering DOL fiduciary rule compliance training. Currencompliance.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Stamps and coins today. David Tripp and Bob Scott. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We go to Bill in Hurley. Bill, you're on.
Okay. Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Hello.
After hearing you guys talk, you'll probably laugh at what I have, but no upside-down airplane.
No inverted Larry or anything? Okay.
You don't mind if we laugh at you, though.
Okay. I have in front of me my mother's 1939 stamp collection book.
Mm-hmm.
And she has passed away, and I've come into this. And there's a whole bunch, you know, she has it filled from all around the world, et cetera. There are many interesting ones from the United States, a lot of 2 and 3 cents, and one 1840, a $1 stamp from the U.S. Department of the Interior. Obviously, you can't see any of these things, but is there any desire for these kinds of things anymore as baby boomers unload and millennials aren't loading, it seems?
There is no question that the demand has diminished somewhat. However, for the right things, the money is extremely good. Is there a title on the front of this album?
The title is Modern Postage Stamp Album, and it has what appears, it's kind of got a biplane flying over a small series of buildings.
And what color is it?
It's red.
This is what's known as a junior volume. I'm very familiar with it. It doesn't actually have terribly many spaces for the more valuable types, and I presume most of the stamps you've got are used.
Yes, not all canceled, though.
How do you mean?
Some of them have cancellations across them.
Yes.
They went through the post, used, I guess, and then some of them don't.
Oh, some of them are unused. Would they seem to be? They're probably from around the time your mother was young.
Right. Yeah, 3 cent, 2 cent, 1 cent.
Right.
There's one of, looks like Ulysses S. Grant on it.
you're probably absolutely right. This is going to be an interesting, it's an interesting keepsake for you. It's not going to have any real value.
Okay.
Because essentially it doesn't appear as though there is anything that has been purchased, and anything that was just collected from the mail from that time period, albeit a long, long time ago. In stamp terms, it's not actually that old.
Okay, when you say purchased, would that be like a full sheet, like a first set or something?
No, that means buying something that is predominantly going to be used from a stamp dealer for a set amount of money, rather than buying the stamps off the mail that you've received in the last week or so.
Okay, because there are some of those. I don't have them here with me. So that might be something of interest.
Well, you know something, at the end of the show, we will be giving out the email address.
Okay.
If you just jot it down, take a couple of images of anything you think that's interesting, send it along, and I will tell you exactly what it's worth.
Okay.
And are there any other general websites that would have these standard junior type stamps and any kind of monetary value or something about them?
Too many to name.
Do your homework for sure.
Yes, exactly. Just look up used stamps on the internet, and unfortunately, you'll be wading through it till for a good few years, which might
you may get
keep
the bug.
Some people happy.
Yeah, you may start a new hobby.
Well, Bill, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. That's my paranoia. You hear Bob say that's it's a junior collection from 39, and you chuck it or give it to somebody, and there's that one rare stamp that old grandma put in there that no one suspected. So you really can't tell until
you look. Well, it's like the toy chest with the $350,000 coin in it.
Exactly.
It's like going onto a beach and picking up a handful of sand and then tossing it away, and then somebody saying, but I dropped a diamond there. There may be a diamond in there, but it's never going to be worth your time sifting through
every grain. I had you on the show.
Grain.
I thought it would be fun, and now you're being a downer already. It's amazing.
But you think about it. I mean, Bob and I collectively have been in our respective businesses for far too long to admit on air.
Thousands of years. Let's
thousands
just say that.
Of years.
Millennia.
Millennia.
Probably another word we can't use.
No, anyway.
Millennia. Very good. Okay.
But,
all right, get out.
The number of quote-unquote discoveries that we've been able to partake in, we can remember virtually every one of them because they are that rare.
Right.
And they are that good. They are worth it.
Yeah. But I have literally
You have high
seen,
standards. I find a stamp that's worth $75 look at this. I found a stamp worth
$75. Well, that's true. We are fortunate to deal at a better end. But they are so rare and far between that they are sort of implanted on your brainstem that you can never forget them. And you remember the stories about them, but they happen so. And this is no joke, I have looked at millions upon millions of coins in my life. And the ones that have popped out at me, and sometimes they tell a really good story and they're worth, 20 cents as opposed to 10 cents.
Right.
But the ones that really pop out and are the superstars,
very rare.
Rare as hen's teeth.
All right. Our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Jeremy in his car. Jeremy, you're on.
Okay. So I found a handful of Sacagawea dollars in the house. I looked it up on the internet.
Yep.
Some of them sold for less than a dollar. What's with that? Are they still legal tender?
They are legal tender, and my suggestion is to you, if somebody is offering you 98 cents for one, don't take it. Just spend it. I mean, that's...
yeah.
I mean, that's the bottom line. Now, they are... They unless you found it in a box of Wheaties, this is no joke. There was a promotion, and there were certain ones that were in boxes of Wheaties, and they have a special little mark on them, which I cannot quite.
You're kidding me.
No. There's a presentation finish. There are some that are worth, you know, $400 or $500, but no.
Okay.
If you find a Sacagawea dollar, spend it.
Put it in a slot machine.
Put it in a slot machine. Yeah.
Okay.
Jeremy, thanks a lot for the call. In fact, we just found one the other day.
Yeah.
And it's scraped up, and I told my daughter, I said, we'll just spend that.
That's a good idea. Or sell it on the internet for 98 cents.
Yeah, but the shipping.
That's it.
It's not worth it. Let's go to Mark
that's
in Liberty.
Terrifying.
Mark, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Thank you very much for taking my call. In listening, I have learned very much. My mother is considering doing away with my father's stamp collection, a predilection which I did not retain from my father, but he has some stamps from our time stationed in Okinawa, and having heard that the email address will be available later.
Let's do it now.
Let's
do the email address now.
Sure. coinandstampguys@burk.com. So it's coinandstamp, one word, at Burk, BERK.com.
Okay.
Now, isn't there a book, or do you have to go country by country? So these stamps are from Okinawa. Is there a book in the library?
I'm the coin guy.
Right. Well, but what I'm saying is there are standard books that you use and standard books that you use.
Yes. There is a standard reference collection for stamps. There are numerous ones for coins. There are actually numerous ones for stamps. Almost every country has their own worldwide version. England has Stanley Gibbons. Ironically, United States is Scott.
Yeah.
Which is France is Yvain Tellier. Germany's Michael.
Then there are big general issues. I mean, certainly for coins, for world coins, we have something that we call the telephone book because that's the size of it. But it's basically coins of the world, and it's got everything, including U.S. in it. It's general. It's not going to get you into the specifics, but it gets you halfway home.
There's one for stamps: the 2015 Classic Specialized Catalog of Stamps and Coins.
So
brilliant. 1840 to 1940.
And that's the abridged version. The full set is 7 volumes, all this size.
Wow, that's
And that's the most expensive, valuable stamp.
Well, you've been extremely helpful, and I hope that you are able to enjoy another millennium in your collecting time, and you have more gems to enjoy.
Thank you.
Okinawa is a difficult one because there are too many issues under occupation, whether it's Japanese and especially if it's Second World War, there's an awful lot of material. So it's probably something that's better for me to look at to be able to make a judgment.
This would have been early 60s, but of course we can send images and you can determine the value thereof.
Well, good luck, Mark. We appreciate that very much. It's 800-348-2551. Stamps and coins today. Who's been waiting the longest? It looks like Linda. Linda in Albany. Linda, you're on.
Hi. I am a reenactor, and in the process of being a reenactor, I have gotten involved in events from the bicentennial of the War of 1812, which is a really big deal in Canada, as you probably know. Mm-hmm. I was up there for, I don't know if you call it a first day issue when it's coins and not stamps, but the Royal Canadian Mint put out set of 9 coins that celebrated famous people or events from the War of 1812. And I got 8 of the 9 coins, and I've been trying to track down the 9th one ever since. But I don't know how to go about doing this. I went to the coin show in this area a couple of weekends ago and talked to someone who collects Canadian coins, but he said, no, not that one. He doesn't have that to offer. And he said you could go online, but you're probably paying a lot of money for a quarter that isn't really worth all that much. And so my question is, if I go back to Canada, which I'm likely to do, Can I find coin shops or
people would go? I mean, it depends on where you, if you're going to Toronto or it depends entirely where you're going. Mm-hmm. That is something that the internet is wonderfully useful for. If you put in rare coin shop Toronto or wherever, they will pull up a list of names for you. And what I would then do is do some due diligence, pull up a few names, and you can always email us with the information. And, you know, there, most places are, most dealers that maintain physical presences are generally pretty good, and they're not going to flim-flam you too much. And you're aware, from speaking to you, you're aware that these things are, you know, they're not going to be worth the earth, the moon, and the sun. A little spoonerism there.
I like that.
Look for them in your change. Now, I've talked to Canadians, and they say, no way are they going to turn up and change because everybody kept them. But I know they're not worth more than a quarter.
If it's it's like a Sacagawea dollar. Spend it if it's worth a dollar. If it's in mint condition, you might get a collector who wants to have one of every, and so he'll pay $1.50. Yeah. So there is always a retail market for something.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's what it's worth to you at that point. But you know well enough not to spend too much money.
Thanks, Linda.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Good luck. About the online auction sites? I imagine, I've never looked, but I imagine you can find almost anything. Is it really caveat emptor as far as buying stamps and coins on, say, eBay or one of the online auction sites?
Well, I think eBay has, to a certain degree, tried to clean up their act, as it were.
They definitely police their own site.
Yeah.
Some are better than others. The ones that are usually collector-driven or an amalgamation, a conglomeration of collectors, they tend to self-police, which is quite good.
Yeah.
So you can find things at a reasonable quality.
Yeah.
I would imagine that without being able to look at it in person, it's tough to get. There are numbers. In other words, there are grades that I've never been able to figure out, grading some of these.
Get in line.
Yeah. Well, I would think it would be tough to buy things over the internet.
Well,
like
a lot of coins, and I think eBay to some degree, they will not take what we call raw coins in certain areas. These are coins that, you know, somebody says is very fine or extremely fine. They'll only, particularly for U.S. coins, they only take the coins that have been put into these things that we call slabs, which are third-party grading services, and there are major ones called NGC and PCGS, which are the accepted standard in the business. And there are certain places that will only handle that sort of stuff. So you're theoretically guaranteed a grade, but a grade is still a subjective matter. It is subjective as much as these third party companies would like to make it a matter of empirical value.
It's a packaged
commodity, and it is a matter of opinion. There are dealers, Bob and I both know, who will buy a coin that is in one of these pieces of plastic, and it says MS65, which is extremely nice, but they see it, and they've got a particular eye, and they're trained to this. They will buy it as an MS65 and pay $1,000, say. They will take it home, and with a pair of metal shears, they'll crack it out.
Which is legal.
Mm-hmm. No, these are not. Yeah, absolutely.
Once you buy it, you can do whatever you want.
Whatever you want with it. They will crack it out of the piece of plastic, and then they will resubmit it to a different service, and it may come back with an MS66 or an MS67. And in some cases, the dollar difference can be doubling or tripling.
Hmm.
But then, and there are people who've made livings doing this.
Is there payola involved?
Always.
Can you say, hey, can I get a 66 out of this?
There are certain dealers who are reputed to have had good relations with various companies, and they can get more or less.
But not you. Nobody likes you, right?
Everybody hates me.
Exactly.
I'm the most hated man in numismatics.
Honest David, they call him. Everybody hates him. All right, let's go back to the phones and Mark in Schenectady. Mark.
Hello, Mark. Hi. My father, when he was in Patton's Third Army and was able to get coins as he left Germany, I don't have them in front of me, but are they worth anything in relation to today's market?
Well, there's always, again, as we were talking again, I mean, the odds are he was getting pocket change of German circulating pocket change of the period.
Marks and Pfennigs.
Yes. Marks
Correct.
And Pfennigs. So the odds are they are low denomination, they are heavily circulated, and they have more collector value and sentimental value to you, kind of like my dad's Chinese coins from the same period. But again, If you want to, we're more than happy to look at any images you want to send us, because, you know, there's always a quirk and there's always something to be found somewhere. So do not hesitate to take an image of something and send it along.
There's the bad news, good news.
One other question. There's some coins when he went back in the 50s to, and went to Italy, mm-hmm. and he also had some coins, some higher value, but higher denomination, excuse me, mm-hmm. higher denomination. Are they worth anything?
Well, again, it's going to just depend on the specifics. So you may be, if it's Italy and coins, the highest denomination circulating at that period would probably been 500 lira. Or 1,000 lira. I mean, you know, exactly. 500 lira was the equivalent of 80 cents back then.
And higher denomination or just higher number. Because, yes, it's
Italy. Bella Italia.
You said there was good and bad news, Bob.
Well, the good news, good, bad, good, regarding American all soldiers returning from Germany after the Second World War is an awful lot of museums were a little lighter in inventory after they came back. So, for instance, in my world, the stamps, the Rijksmuseum was broken into, and a lot of very, very rare stamps came back. Now, there were also valuable coins.
Have they turned up or were they destroyed?
Actually, the funny thing is almost all of them have now turned up.
Interesting.
And unfortunately, the people that brought them back have not benefited in any way, shape, or form. The last lot actually came from somebody who died, and it was one of the kids that brought the stamps into a stamp show. And a dealer, English dealer actually, looked at them and said, these are fabulous, these are really good, made a few phone calls, turned out that they'd been missing since 1945, and they are now back in Berlin.
Interesting. Even though it was the losing side, they were taken illegally, and they were eventually brought back.
Well, the looting of museums was as frowned on then as it is now.
So that's such an interesting...
And the statute never runs out.
Our guests today, Bob Scott and David Tripp. We talk Stoins and
Stoins
camps.
And camps. Right.
Stoins and camps.
I'm Norm Crosby.
Spoinerism,
we'll
too.
We'll be right back.
Support comes from Union College Concert Series, presenting Korean-American violinist Soo-Vin Kim, performing a program of solo works by Johann Sebastian Bach, Sunday, November 20th, 3 p.m. UnionCollegeConcerts.org. Boyden & Pair in Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services in a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenAndPair.com. Mango Tree Imports, Saratoga Springs, New York, joining other Saratoga Marketplace stores for a special holiday open house on Saturday, November 19th from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. MangoTreeImports.com and on Facebook. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost three decades. ShannonRose.com. And Stavros, Springfield and Amherst, Massachusetts, awarding businesses and individuals for their work and service and accessibility for people with disabilities. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org.
Wonderful music. Thank you. That's a Coleman Hawkins and the orchestra here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Ray Graff with you at Stamps and Coins today. David Tripp and Bob Scott. All right, we'll hit the lightning round in a moment here, and we'll go through as many calls as we can. However, let's do a couple of quick emails here. This one's from Stephen in Pine Bush. I think you're confusing the Wheaties pennies with the Cheerios dollar. That's what Stephen says.
He's probably right.
All right, Stephen, chalk one up for you. This one's from Crystal. I'm fascinated by American coins and especially love when I find a wheat penny or some other no longer circulated coin in my loose change. What should I be on the lookout for to help me identify whether or not I have found something of any value, other than face value, of course? And that's from Crystal.
All right. Well, Crystal, what I suggest is go to the library or go to the store and buy it. It's called the Guidebook of United States Coins by R.S. Yeoman. It's also called the Red Book, and it's what dealers will charge you if you want to buy it. And if you want to find out what they'll pay, get the Blue Book. And it's got a little bit of history in it. And since it sounds like you're interested, please go for it and good luck.
All right, this one's from Paul. My father has a collection of duck stamps. I said that said that very carefully. From the 80s and early 90s, both federal and state, some first of state. He has the stamps and the single and the signed numbered prints for each. Where can I find their current value? We enjoyed watching the movie Million Dollar Duck about the artists and the competition.
Yes, and don't forget Fargo, which was actually the Marge Gunderson's husband was a duck stamp designer.
Oh, right.
Isn't that just...
That's a good call.
That's a good one.
Wonderful Fargo. Sam Houston Philatelics, guy called Bob Dumain. You can find him on the website. You'll find almost everything listed there and the prices. You got to be careful with later... state hunting permits, which is a lot easier and better to say than duck stamps.
Yes, be careful, my friend.
For the obvious lips, some of them were sold at discounts, so they're almost unsaleable. The regular federal duck stamps are worth a percentage of their face value. Obviously, they're no good for hunting because the year has expired, and they are individual stamps, $7.50, $10 a throw. Uh-huh. So you can end up with a lot of face value. But that's it. Sam Houston, Philatelics, Bob Dumain.
Fair enough.
You'll find him on the website, and they'll tell you what everything is worth.
All right, one last email, and then to the lightning round on the phones. This one is from Barry. Question, I am selling a stamp collection. Should I do a detailed inventory and then bring it to a dealer, or can dealers be trusted?
Ha ha! Ha ha ha.
If they are a member of the American Stamp Dealers Association, which is a self-regulating, very, very old and august firm, they are going to be straight with you. Allow for the fact that they're going to have to make some money out of it, too.
Yeah.
And the chances are they're 99% of collections are not going to be of any interest, and that's going to be the most honest response you get when
hurts.
They say they do not want it.
That hurts. All right. To the phones we go, and the lightning round, Walt in Plattsburgh. Walt, you're on.
Yes. I've got a story of a bit of seller's remorse.
Okay.
I've always been interested in coins since inheriting my great-uncle's World War II collection, and I've got some military collection myself, but after retiring about 10 years ago, I began buying silver and gold and selling it and buying world coins and having a real good time with it until I sold South African Krugerrand, 1 ounce gold.
Yeah.
eBay assured me that the money was in my account, and then in PayPal also gave me the money in my account.
Okay.
And then PayPal issued a chargeback. The person on the other end apparently used a credit card, and they took the money away, and I had already mailed the coin out.
Ouch. Okay. I'm sorry
and
to
I
hear
lost
that.
The coin.
Walt, that is a good cautionary tale. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Over to Al in New Windsor. Al, you're on.
Hello. I use about $10,000 a year in postage for my business, and I've discovered something called discount postage, and that means you're buying liquidations of giant, I guess, supplies that stamp dealers have bought out from other stamp dealers or from estates. So the goal is to buy thousands of dollars worth of stamps just to use for postage.
What do you pay on the dollar?
Yeah, well, sometimes you can get 20, 30% off face value if you're lucky at a flea market. I've paid half off face value, but
I don't
maybe a bit of a collector. Here's what I want to ask you, because I've gotten, you get piles and piles of mint sheets of full sets of stamps going back to the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, beautiful commemoratives, and it's made us fascinated in them with all the little images and stories and history on them. So I'm started to collect a mint sheet of everyone that comes through. I got a little Scott's catalog, so I can look what they are, what they're worth. So what I'm wondering is it really worthwhile to try and collect mint sheets? I don't see serious stamp collectors ever doing that. When I see stamp collections, they've got one example of a stamp, maybe four stamp blocks of them. Does anybody really collect mint sheets, and is there much of a purpose or a value to keeping a sheet intact?
People do, but more, unfortunately, it was a big thing throughout the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, which is why there's so much out on the market today. It's a great thing to collect at the moment because you can basically buy mint sheets at 50% of face value. In fact, you can buy all your postage at 50% of face value, and a couple of years ago it was 55%. So I would imagine within 2 or 3 years it's going to be 40%. So my recommendation is do it, because push comes to shove. As long as you buy reasonably high denomination stamps, you'll be able to use them on the mail. So at least your Christmas cards will... get a little bit of a flair. Sorry, we're running a little short on time. Yeah. I hope that's useful.
Well, Al, thank you very much. And let's go over to line two. And Doug in Saratoga. Doug.
Hi, how you guys doing today?
Good.
Hi, how are you?
My dad's been collecting stamps for about 70 years. He's a collector, a part-time dealer.
God bless him.
Over a million stamps so far.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still going to shows and selling and things like that. But my question is, in the future... A, where's the best place to find a buyer for a collection like that? And also, realistically, what percentage of like book or Scott value should we expect on a collection like that?
A really rough guide, if you're prepared to do it. Unless it's got a Scott value of over $20, don't even bother counting it. If it's unused postage from the 1920s onwards, count it at 50% of face value. And if you start getting a good run of stamps that are $100 plus or what have you, go and find a member of the American Stamp Dealers Association and let him look at it, because it'll save you an awful lot of time. There is nothing like spending 30, 40 hours writing out an inventory only to find out that it's completely unsaleable.
I've done that.
So have I. So have I. And so has David.
Yes, indeed.
All right, Doug, thank you very much. And let's see who's been waiting the longest here. Over on line six, it's Andy in Cooperstown. Andy, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I'm a member of a local historical association. We have a $20 national currency, Series 1929.
Right.
And what makes it interesting, I think, is that it's issued on behalf of the local bank. In other words, the signatures were local personalities, and it's stamped with the name of the local bank.
Right.
It's been folded in half, but otherwise it's in very good condition. It's probably difficult to get some feeling for that bill on the phone, but did you have any thoughts?
Right. Well, they do have value. It depends on the bank on which it issued it. I mean, national banknotes were basically chartered banks by the United States government. And depending on locality, the values for, you know, the same issue of note can vary widely. So if you can, if you send us an image of it, just scan it. Reduce it a little bit, send it to us, and if it's a more interesting one, we can give you some information, and hopefully you can do some information.
I will probably at this. It's we're closed in the winter, so I'll have to send you a scan of a scan.
That's fair enough.
It'll all be visible to you.
Sounds great. And sometimes the banks are still in business.
Yeah, and they are all listed, so there will at least be population
has
information.
Has gone through several successor banks, but
right.
it was issued for the building itself is intact,
right.
And it's our town's. It was the National Central Bank at the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no, but those though do have interest. That's fabulous. Yeah.
Andy, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Amy in Albany. Amy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I just wanted to ask, I have a small gold coin that I inherited from my grandmother. And it's marked 1857, and it's a $2.50 piece. But someone has taken it and punched a hole in it, put it through a pocket watch chain. So I have the chain. It's still on the chain. But I wanted to ask about how did that hole impact the value of the coin and then the gold chain added on. I don't know.
Let's put it this way. It doesn't help it. The bottom line.
That's too bad.
It's too bad. I mean, it's nice. I mean, it's an early mid-19th century quarter eagle. Putting a hole through it, basically, for the most part, unless it's an excessively rare issue, which 1857 off the top of my head is not, it reduces it to basically worth
$100
scrap
in gold.
Scrap value. Yeah, so figure it's probably got 0.12, one-tenth of an ounce, little 0.12, tenth of an ounce of gold in it, so figure $120, $125.
Okay, Amy, thanks a lot for that. And on line nine, John in Stockbridge, you got to turn the phone down or something, man. No? Zach is shaking his head. All right, we're going to let you go. I apologize. Obviously, it was an airline hangar or something. Stephanie in Glens Falls. Stephanie, you're on.
Yes, hi. I have a question about coins. Yeah. I have a couple of collections that I inherited, and I would really love to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure the best way to do that.
Well, do you know what type of coins are they? Are they U.S.? Are they foreign?
They're U.S. coins. I have a lot of proof sets, but I also have just some loose coins, a lot of silver dimes, old penny collection that my brother started years ago. I have most of the coin denominations.
Okay. Well, I mean, the point is that if it's pre-1964, if it's silver, you can gather it up and you can actually sell that. It's very easy to sell that sort of material, which is based on the bullion value. But the point is, we were talking about making up inventories of things that aren't worth much. But with coins, there's always the chance of a scarcer date. So if you have a 1916 dime, it's worth, you know, $10. But if it's a 1916 D dime, little D on the back, it can be worth $1,000 or a great deal more. So my theory is, go and try and get a copy of the Red Book, as I mentioned, the guidebook, and give yourself a little bit of a start to at least make yourself a list of better dates, and then go through the stuff pretty quickly. And then if you find anything and something is in better condition, you can always send us an image, and we'll give you a pointer.
All right, Stephanie, thank you. And Carl in Egremont. Carl, you're on.
Great, thanks. Thanks hey, for taking my call. I'm just trying to get an answer curiosity question. Here I have a 1908 St. Gaudens No Motto.
No Motto. $20 gold piece.
I'm sorry?
It's $20 gold piece, yes. Great design.
I'm just trying to get an idea of its approximate value.
Okay, well, it depends on the condition always, but these days...
Well, if this helps, it's an MS67.
MS67.
Oh, his eyebrows just went up, Carl.
Well,
stand by.
That's worth more than I made today.
He's looking in a book.
Okay. If it really is an MS67, it's in a slab or something like that.
Okay.
It can be worth, let's say, around $10,000.
Yikes.
Say that again?
Around $10,000.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
Is that all right? A 67 is, you know, we were talking about the grading scales, and 70 is theoretical perfection.
Yeah.
And so 67 is not far off the mark, and it will have very few marks, and it will be gorgeous.
10 large. Wow, that's the best we've ever done on this show.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah. Good. Send us an image, because it also depends on the grading service, and there are fluctuations.
Well, with NGC graded?
NGC is a good company, yep.
Wow, Carl, good job. Thank you for calling.
All right.
All righty, thanks.
I wonder if I get a cut. That would be interesting.
It might be part of a hoard that was discovered, the Wells Fargo hoard, a number of years ago, and there were a lot of very, very super duper high grade pieces.
And that would lower the value, theoretically.
No. They've held their value.
Matthew and Dalton is on. Matthew.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Hi.
Good. How are you?
Great.
I traveled to Peru a few years ago, and I took some Sacagawea dollars with me. And, you know, Sacagawea was an indigenous person here.
Right.
And looks very much like the indigenous people there. And when I handed them out, the response was priceless.
Oh, how wonderful.
I'm sure. Well, that's great.
And a similar thing happened later on when I took some to Tibet. So I just wanted you to know they're not just worth a dollar in some places in the world.
Good point. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
John, who was disconnected a while ago in West Stockbridge, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call again. This is a combination stamp in a coin has a mica over the front, and
yes.
It's called a Jay Gault.
Oh, Jay Gault. It's what we call encased postage.
We could fight over this because
we have 1.5 minutes left. I'd love to see a fight.
Do you have a listing for it? I mean, I can look it up. They do have value if the mica is...
Jay Gault is the standard. They were advertising on the back during the Civil War.
Right.
These were made basically to cover, because we were running out of...
August 12th, 1862. Yep.
Right. It was a civil war because all copper was going to munitions, so they didn't have anything to make the coins, so they substituted in paper, and they basically used stamps.
And they used a piece of mica to cover and then advertising
money
on the back.
Huh. And they're fabulous. They're a very strange collecting area because they as they say, they're the fall between...
They're neither beast nor fowl.
Yes, but there was a fabulous collection of encased postage, part of the John Ford collection,
yep, absolutely.
Which unfortunately fell on the coin side of the world, so half the stamp world never
got
to
see
it.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
But it's fabulous. If you drop us an email, I can tell you exactly which one it is. Depends on whether the mica, the little plastic,
is clear or not.
Clear, original, because a lot of them get changed over, yeah. And the overall condition. But there are some very, very scarce types.
Yeah, and Jay right. Galt is the best known of the issuers.
All right, this right. is a good time. We're just about out of time, so this is a good time once again for your email address.
It's coinandstampguys@burk.com. Coinandstamp, one word, at Burk, BERK.com.
What a show. It's over.
It is?
And
it
was nary so a mention of any presidential elections or anything. So it was pretty good.
There was an election?
Who won?
I'll tell you, it was nice to exhale for the first time in a few weeks. nice to have you boys here. We are just about out of time. Support comes from the Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, Sunday, 12 to 5, HydeCollection.org. Dance Flurry announcing Albany Shindig tomorrow, 7 p.m. at First Congregational Church, Albany, featuring a concert and participatory hoedown dance with live fiddle music. DanceFlurry.org for information. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, nbtbank.com. And the Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com. Thanks again to David Tripp and Bob Scott for being here today. Thanks to you, the listener, for calling, for listening, for yelling at the radio. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who is our engineer. Your phones were answered today by Deb Malik. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. It's Thursday today. That would make tomorrow Friday. My heavens, Deanna Fox will be in the house. We'll talk pies on Food Friday. Oh, I can't have pies. How can you lose? All right, news is next.